Welcome to Morning Report Top Stories, a selection of news from Radio New Zealand National's Morning News Programme.
An Auckland inner city hotel has decided it'll only take guests who are fully vaccinated from November. The hotel Britomart, including its restaurant, will turn away anyone who cannot prove they've had two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. The hotel's owner also operates The Landing in the Bay of Islands, which is also part of the vaccine mandate. Well, guests at the hotels will have to show their vaccine documentation to book a room. And those turning up for level 3 takeaways will also be asked to show their vaccine status on arrival. The hotel's general manager, Clinton Farley, says they're taking the stance to keep their staff and guests safe.
We've decided to take a stance on mandating vaccines across our entire team. So we're aiming for all teams to be vaccinated by the 1st of November. And further to that, everything that we do at the Hotel Britomart is aimed at providing the best possible experience for our guests. So with that said, we're mandating that all suppliers and contractors and visitors, whether they be guests or restaurant patrons, also are double dosed and are able to provide evidence of that before setting foot on our property.
He says customers, guests and contractors will be given plenty of warning.
Prior to their arriving at the hotel, we send out a number of communications, whether that be on our website or our booking engines. And we also ask people to confirm that they have been double dose vaccinated. If they arrive at the hotel or the restaurant without evidence of such, we will be not be able to check them into the hotel or allow them to dine at our restaurant.
Mr. Farley says the legal ramifications have been considered and the decision to introduce a vaccine mandate was not taken lightly. Other businesses not so bold. The Hotel Council Aotearoa has formally asked the Ministers of Tourism and Finance to pass legislation to make vaccine mandates legal in the hotel and hospitality sectors. Its Strategic Director James Doolan says many business owners don't want to take the risk themselves.
I'm hearing from members that they would like to introduce vaccine mandates, but it's important that the government takes the lead and passes legislation confirming vaccine mandates by hotels and other hospitality venues would be legal. Earlier on in the fight against COVID, the government passed legislation confirming that the lockdowns were legal. And I think it's perfectly reasonable for hotels and hospitality venues to ask the government to pass similar legislation confirming that the vaccine mandates are legal too.
Mr. Doolan says he hopes the government's announcement this Friday will include a vaccine mandate for the hotel and hospitality sectors. The move to reopen schools for senior students at the start of next week poses a significant risk for increasing case numbers. This is according to a government advisor. Secondary school students in years 11 to 13 who live in alert level 3 areas will be able to return to the classroom from next Tuesday. Dr. Dion O'Neill is a physicist and contagion modeller with Te Punaha Matatini, a group of experts funded to provide advice on the COVID-19 response. And he's with us now. Kia ora.
Kia ora, morena.
Give us the situation here in terms of the level of risk. You see it as significant. Why is that?
Yeah, so there's two things that happen when students go back to school. So obviously, with students back in schools and mixing at schools, you're going to get an increase from the new infections that happen in schools. But what the modelling suggests is that actually where you're going to see most of the new infections happen is not directly in schools themselves, but once infected students from schools bring that infection home, we're going to see an increase in infection through other contexts. So this would be people who are still going to work at alert level 3, infections within households, or infections in the remaining interactions that are still happening in the community. And so a relatively small increase in the number of infections in schools, by connecting up these different parts of the country or the community that would otherwise not be connected on this contagion network, it drives an increase of the number of infections overall that's much greater than just the number in schools.
Okay, so this is where kind of bubbles are burst to a much greater extent. And what do you anticipate the case numbers doing?
And so it'll depend a lot on exactly how many infections come from schools and a lot on how the transmission environment that those infections spread into can happen. So a bad case could be that you see a bump in infections in schools of maybe an order of tens of percents or less, but a much greater than that increase in infections. So potentially even as bad as doublings of numbers outside of schools.
The government has got some mitigation in the strategy, though, ventilation and mask mandates, that kind of thing. How effective are they going to be here?
So those are all, they're all good things to have. The list of requirements that have been put out, really, and so there's two issues that I would raise. One is that putting out the announcement, when there's really only two working days between the announcement to return to schools and when students are going back for the public holiday, doesn't give schools or students and their families much time to prepare for making the environment safe. And the other concern would be that a lot of those requirements that have been noticed wouldn't really conform to what we'd expect as a gold standard plan for confirming for returning to school. So things like requiring people to stay home when they're unwell or practicing good hand hygiene or displaying QR codes are really at the absolute lower end of what we'd expect to be put in place to reduce transmission.
What else could be done that would perhaps help to mitigate the situation?
So things like ventilation and filtration in schools to improve air quality is definitely one of the big ones. So what other countries have done is, where it's not possible to rapidly introduce new air ventilation systems, is they've bought in portable filtration systems. And these aren't cheap. They cost about $1,000 per classroom. But in the grand scheme of things, when there's maybe a couple of thousand schools in the country with a few classrooms at each, this can look relatively cost-effective as a way to immediately try and get air quality up.
What about things like saliva testing? Should that be used before students return to school?
And so not necessarily saliva testing, but the important aspect here is the rapid antigen testing. So these are these tests that can be carried out and a result returned in around 15 minutes. And so other countries that have tried to have a safe return to schools or to work have used these and has often done things like requesting that people take one of these tests twice a week. They're less, a bit less invasive than PCR.
Yeah, how do they work?
Right, so it depends, the details depend exactly on the particular test, but essentially you swab around either your mouth or your throat. So some of them ask people to try and swab down as far as their tonsils. Sometimes it's something around your nose, not as far up normally as a PCR test would go. And then you can use that swab, you can, similar process to a pregnancy test, almost you get a response back within a few minutes saying you either, that whether or not you are likely to be highly infectious. And so what that means is that you can quickly say, okay, this person is highly infectious, they definitely shouldn't be going to, well, there's a probability they're highly infectious, they shouldn't be going to school, they should be getting a PCR test and isolating, and it lets you break those chains of transmission before they develop.
Appreciate your time. Thank you. That is Dr. Dion O'Neill from Te Pūnaha Matatini.
An Auckland emergency nurse says many of her colleagues go home after every shift wondering if they can go back for the next one as COVID cases rise. There were 43 people in hospital yesterday, just one short of the record number, and Middlemore Hospital was predicting 20 cases a day through its ED by next month. The nurse is a delegate for the nurses' organisation and works in one of the city's main hospitals. She told health correspondent Rowan Quinn not enough has been done to prepare.
Right now, nurses are feeling so anxious and they're getting so despondent because they feel that our healthcare system is not going to cope. On a daily shift basis, we are so short of staff because lots of staff have been already stood down. The DHBs are trying to fill the gaps and it's just impossible because we do not have the staffing available. So nurses are really, really feeling it, feeling really anxious, and they feel like, you know, there's a tsunami coming. They can see the tsunami coming. What do they do? Do they run towards it or do they back off? That is what they are feeling. We are feeling right now.
And in terms of, you know, having the nursing shortages in emergency departments, is that across all of Auckland's DHBs?
Yes, this is happening all around Auckland EDs. The nurses are working short-staffed as it is. And then on a daily basis, they are getting texts to say, can you work? Can someone pick up this shift? And that is 3-4 nurses short per shift or 2 healthcare assistants. So it is becoming a very dire situation right now. And they are thinking, what am I doing here? why am I having to do this?
Do you think people are going to leave?
Yes, people are going to be leaving.
Have you already had people leaving?
Yes, we've had people leaving.
Like
the stress is getting too much for them. They are unable to cope with the stress.
Is that recently?
And that is, yes, and that's senior nurses as well. Some of these nurses have been nursing for over 20 years, and they find that this is it. I cannot handle this anymore. And so we are losing experienced nurses.
If it's short-staffed in an ED shift, what does that mean for the nurses there? How is their work different if there's not enough of them?
That's the whole issue here. Because we can't fill the gaps on a certain shift, it puts a huge amount of stress on the nurses that are working on the day, because they are scrambling to try and help each other. And it's just becoming horrendous for them, because they are also thinking, if this is going to go on any further and we are going to have a further influx of COVID patients that need to be isolated, we do not have the space to put them. We cannot put them in the corridor. So where do we send them? How do we manage this? The DHBs are trying their best, but I think right now they also do not have any answers because of the shortage of staffing.
And that was an emergency nurse from one of Auckland's hospitals speaking with health correspondent Rowan Quinn. We're going to speak to the health minister after 7 here on Morning Report. A 10-point plan from the National Party for opening up the country again includes a boost to wage subsidies, tax cuts for small businesses, $100 hospitality vouchers, and our airports humming once again with double vaccinated international visitors. The government says it's already pursuing the plan's good bits, but is against a hard start date, which has been proposed as December the 1st. But what do Auckland businesses say about the latest plan for ending lockdown limbo? Joining us are representatives of two relevant sectors, travel and hospitality. David Coombs is the Managing Director of Flight Centre, and Mandy Lusk, a co-owner of the Vivace restaurant in downtown Auckland. Good morning to you both.
Good morning. Good morning, Corin.
Okay, I'll start with you, Mandy, in the hard-hit hospo sector. What do you like about this? Let's talk maybe the vouchers as a good starting point. Would this work?
I think anything that entices people back out into our industry is a fantastic thing. I think there's a lot of fear out there, but we realise, we know how to run safe businesses. We're quite controlled by the Sale of Liquor Act anyway, and we want people, you know, ours is like the living room for many inner-city apartments, and we need people to get back out, feel comfortable, start socialising safely again. And I think so many people have been impacted financially. To get just something little to get them back out would be great.
Mm. And you support the December 1 date?
Yeah, very much. It's been heartbreaking. This week's resurgence package for us went mostly on PAYE, and the balance was refunding Christmas function deposits.
What if on December 1 there are, hundreds of cases daily? I mean, the reality is a lot of Aucklanders might not want to go out to bars and restaurants.
True, they might, and we respect that. It's going to make it hard, but there are other people also who desperately need socialisation, and people who want to get back to work, because the mental health toll on them in our industry is huge. It is going to be hard, especially being in the CBD in Auckland. Having something to aim for will
make... Gives you a bit of hope.
Yeah, and for some businesses, they won't be able to open like bars, and it may help them make decisions about the future. At least they have a date to make.
Just finally, Mandy, before I move to you, David, will you be able to survive this? I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? You can get through. Can you see the light at the other side?
The longer it goes on, the dimmer it gets. But, you know, for us, it's walking away from something for many of us that we've worked all our lives for. So we'll hang in there and do our very best. But we just need to be able to be open and be trusted to open safely. I think National's acknowledgement of compensation for those businesses forced to trade or not trade at all is gratefully received.
And understand. I better get to David because we're running a bit short of time, but thank you, Mandy. David at Flight Centre, in your industry, what do you like about this plan that perhaps you would like the government to pick up?
Well, firstly, Corin, I like that there's a plan. I like that there's milestones and there's targets and there's, you know, firm and detailed actions. And that's what we've been calling out for a long time. You know, what we really like, you know, for our industry is that we can see, you know, in this plan, a place where international borders reopen. And that's absolutely the key. And, you know, that's the key for us as an industry, but it's also the key for our customers. We've got customers who are separated families. We've got corporate, you know, New Zealand who want to get back out and do business again. You know, there's everyday Kiwis who are desperate for a holiday. It's been a really stressful time. And, you know, they've got their money tied up in credits with numerous travel providers. So the opportunity to travel safely, to welcome international visitors and not be left behind, because the rest of the world is opening up. There's limited air capacity globally at the moment anyway, and the risk is if we don't get moving that New Zealand gets left behind, and that's no good for New Zealand Inc.
Plans, though, are difficult at the moment. Look at the UK. I mean, they're having to start, perhaps have a bit of a rethink. Delta doesn't always allow plans to be made.
Well, it doesn't, and we need to be able to pivot. But we've been making impossible decisions for 18 months now, Corin. So, you know, we're pretty adept as an industry and as you know, a country at pivoting. But if you don't move towards the future of where we need to get to, and the circumstances are changing here in New Zealand, even the vaccination targets in this plan are higher than just about anywhere in the globe, including Queensland, who are, you know, renowned as being very conservative. So I think there's a lot there to safeguard New Zealand and enable us.
Okay. Hey, David, I'm sorry to have to cut you short. We're running short of time this morning, but thank you very much for that. David Coombs there, Managing Director of Flight Centre, and Mandy Lusk also speaking there, the co-owner of the Vivace restaurant downtown Auckland. I spoke earlier to Health Minister Andrew Little, and he says he recognises the strain hospital staff are under, but has confidence in the system.
I understand there's a lot of that sense of anxiety around the nursing workforce, those in ED and other parts of hospitals too, because we're at that point now where things are starting to change. People are concerned about that rise in number of cases. The whole way that this government has managed the response to COVID right back to last year, one of the critical issues we've had in our mind is the impact on the health system and making sure that the decisions we take and what we do minimises that impact so that we don't see overwhelmed hospitals and overwhelmed...
Are they overwhelmed, though? Because they're already saying they are stressed and we know it's going to get worse.
Well, we know they are stretched. We know that there are a lot of vacancies in the nursing workforce, have been for some time, and we're trying to address that. We've seen, just in response to the latest outbreak, actually the Auckland DHBs have got nurses in from other parts of the country to provide some respite and provide some assistance as well. But it is topmost in my mind about the decisions we take about whether or not we reduce restrictions and when we do so, the impact on the health system. That's why we need to get the vaccination rates up, because people who are vaccinated do not get as sick as people who are unvaccinated, and we're acutely aware of the impact that could have on the nursing.
Well, are you comfortable, given that, are you comfortable with the decision to open up secondary schools to senior students in Auckland? There are some who feel that will boost case numbers.
Yes, because the age group that is going to be allowed back to school are of an age that can be vaccinated. Many are vaccinated. There will still be measures in place, the requirement to wear masks where they can to keep social distancing and what have you. And I trust the schools and school leaders who will allow those students back in to make sure that those measures are taken.
How many staff have been brought in from other parts of the country to help in Auckland?
In the last few weeks, as I understand it, not all at the same time, but roughly 120, 130 have been brought in. A lot of them have provided relief at the MIQs, because that's, you know, a lot of nurses and health workers have been deployed to those facilities. That's what's causing the stretch, if you like, for the health workforce in Auckland.
Okay, so where are we at? Have you activated the surge capacity yet, or is that still to come, and will that be enough?
Well, the surge capacity is available, so we've trained up to nearly 1,400 extra nurses to be able to work in an ICU environment under supervision. But if you have a look at the numbers now, roughly 760-odd cases We have 37 people in hospital, and at the moment, two of those in ICU. So the need to draw on that surge capacity is not required just at the moment, but I get the daily report on what is happening in the hospitals. We get the daily report on COVID cases and how many are hospitalised, and we are keeping a very close eye on that.
Well, the key thing there is the hospitalisation rate, and what is your modelling showing you about that rate and where things will be at in a couple of weeks? Because Middlemore's fearing that it's going to have, you know, next month it'll have 20 a day turning up.
Yeah, and I think some of the modelling is some of the worst case scenario modelling, but at the moment the hospitalisation rate is roughly 5%. The ICU admission rate hovers between 0.5% to about 1%. That's what it's at the moment, and that's because, although...
Has that been increasing, or is it steady?
That's been steady now for, you know, nearly a couple of weeks, so... Look, we know that a lot of the people who are turning up in hospital are those who are unvaccinated, but the proportion of the population who is vaccinated, particularly in Auckland, is growing. We're up to 89% roughly now in Auckland, but we still have a way to go. So we don't want to get too relaxed about it because we know the impact on the hospital system could be great.
We know the COVID minister, Chris Hipkins, said yesterday that the forecast shows that then that the daily rates could get into the high hundreds. If we look at some comparative countries or states, New South Wales, they've got 124 in ICU at the tail end of their surge. Is that a number New Zealand could cope with?
We have available at any one time roughly 320 or 325 ICU or high dependency unit beds. That's across our total hospital system across the country. We're currently occupying about 220 of those. We don't want to lift the rate up a huge amount because of COVID. We need beds available for other things. At the moment, the rate has been pretty steady at kind of 1% or less in terms of admissions to ICU. But we are keeping a constant eye on it, and it's debated, isn't it?
Because we've had the likes of Wellington ICU specialist Paul Young coming out questioning your numbers, those numbers that you have put forward. There's debate over what's surge capacity, what's not. Why are people in the health system not confident and not agreeing with you on the ICU bed numbers?
Well, I can't account for them. I can't account for people who kind of misstate or misrepresent what I've said. What I've said is the advice that I'm getting from the Ministry of Health, and I get the daily report about available ICU and HDU capacity. It hovers around sort of 325 beds across the system as a whole. And we have the workforce and the equipment to go with that. Part of that workforce is the surge-trained workforce. The advice from overseas, other countries who have been through a lot worse than we have, are all telling us the surge-trained workforce is totally adequate under supervision to provide care for COVID patients.
The MIQ changes, which will allow more health workers to come in, how quickly can you see people use that and come through into the health system to help the likes of those nurses in Auckland who are already feeling strained?
Well, I'm hoping that the DHBs and the PHOs and other health organisations who have been trying to get people across the border, they now have the channel to do that. They should be activating the people who they've made job offers to get them across the border. So those people should be landing in a matter of the next couple of weeks and entering our system in a couple of weeks after that.
And there, of course, is competing interests in the health system. What assurances can you give, for example, the aged care sector, which is chronically understaffed, 900 I think they need, that they will get some of that allocation?
They will, because they have to, because they need registered nurses working for in their workforce as well. And I know I've had some of those outfits in touch with me about their needs. So they will be able to take up some of that 300 positions a month.
Now, the Health Minister, Andrew Little, his office has called to clarify one point he made there, that the 120 to 130 nurses brought into Auckland, now that has been since the start of the outbreak in August, not that it's just the last few weeks, as he suggested there. Business is back in Te Tai Tokoro, but lurching in and out of lockdown has taken its toll on the north. Sam Olley reports from Whangarei.
Car parks are full, shops have queues, and social lives have been resurrected. Even the seagulls sound a little more excitable. Sewing shop Bernina Northland made 30 sales in its first hour back open yesterday morning. co-owner Tim Robinson was at the till helping keen sewers, knitters and crafters restock their supplies of patterns, wool, fabrics, thread and elastic.
I'm on top of the world at the moment. I mean, I always laugh in retail because I can never forecast the next hour, never mind the next month or the next year. So to me, every day that's a busy day is a great day.
He hopes the snap lockdown will be Te Tai Tokerau's last, but just three quarters of people in the region have had a Pfizer jab, so the threat remains.
We take each day as it comes. If we have another lockdown, we'll just have to grit our teeth and nut our way through it.
Northland Chamber of Commerce Chief Executive Steve Smith says most employers lost sleep when yet another lockdown struck.
People in the north are very stoic. Don't show too much emotion, but I think their emotional glass, if you like, their emotional limits have been reached for many people, and they're starting to feel the strain and the frustrations of what this has done to us as a community. With respect to their business, they've got a lot to worry about.
And he says the budgets of accommodation, hospitality, retail and tourism ventures rely on welcoming Aucklanders this summer.
If they can't, that would pose financially some severe punishment on them.
Whangarei's CBD was busy with spenders all day.
It feels good to be able to have a haircut. That was the whole idea, was to get to town and have a haircut as fast as I could.
Going to a restaurant? Jimmy Jack's is the place to go. For ribs anyway. Beautiful meals.
Going to go to the library and get some printing done.
Come to Spark and just do things like lotto tickets.
Te Kwa's cafe manager Aisha Pereira Merenage said the kitchen had been quiet when customers were restricted to takeaways over lockdown, but it was a relief to open doors again.
We never know how we're going to change the level. Yeah, it's so hard for the business people. So I think we'll be okay after a few months. Everything will be fine.
Meanwhile, the woman who prompted Te Tai Tokerau's sudden lockdown is nearing 2 weeks in a COVID-19 quarantine facility in Auckland, where she was transferred on the night of Thursday, October 7. It has not been revealed if she and her travelling companion will be charged or taken into custody upon release.
The students in years 11 to 13 get ready to return to classes in Auckland next week. Many parents are prepping for a slightly more normal life. Natalie Robinson, a mother of three from Parnell, is one who cheered the government's decision to allow some students back to school, and she's with us now. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
What's so good about this?
It's been a long lockdown for these children. They've done everything that the government's asked them to. They've stayed home and learnt online, and they haven't seen their friends or their extended family for 9 weeks or so now, and they've lost a lot, I think, their winter sport and all their, you know, the normal life. They are children, after all, and I think they really need these interactions. We're delighted our son's going back on Tuesday. He was really excited. He's fully vaccinated. Our 13-year-old boy can't go back, and it's disappointing for him. But the school has been great online, and they've given us all the reassurance and information around how they're going to operate safely. We've got a really high vaccination rate in our wider community, and apparently 99% of the teachers are vaccinated, and most of the boys. So
you feel pretty confident with the situation with your boys going back?
Absolutely, yes.
And how have you been coping with, I suppose, with the social side? Like you're saying, the online learning's been good, but, you know, what's it been like for three teenagers still trying to kind of keep up their, to some extent, a normal life and a level of social life?
I think, they adapt. They've all got phones and they're constantly networked and talking to their friends, but I think it's been really boring for them, and they're quite flat, and they've gamed probably online too much, and they've gone for runs and they've walked the dog, and I think they're at the end of things they can do to entertain themselves now. They don't really understand how they can be vaccinated and have done everything that they were supposed to do and still be locked down. And I sort of agree with them, really. Now that Delta's here to stay, we have to figure out a way for these kids to move forward and get out of this cycle of boredom and isolation.
Look, thank you for talking to us this morning. It's a difficult situation, certainly, that a lot of parents I know have been wrestling with at various points. Natalie Robinson, thank you very much. Mother of three there from Parnell in Auckland.
You've been listening to Morning Report Top Stories from RadioNZ.co.nz.